Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
It pays to maybe not get the max rent you could in exchange for getting a very good tenant.
Are you ready for the best real estate investing advice ever? Join Joe Fairless and today's best ever guests as they share it with you. It's the best ever advice with none of the fluff. Let's go.
Heard of crowdfunding and still curious about how you can benefit from it? Well, we've got a step-by-step guide put together just for you by the best ever team and Patch of Land, the industry's leading crowdfunding experts. The best crowdfunding crash course ever, episodes 152, 159, 166, and 173 will provide you all you need to know to get started and begin benefiting immediately. Whether it's getting access to funds for your project or passively investing in other people's deals, the time is now to get started with Patch of Land. Go to patchofland.com/best ever to grab your copy of the top 10 answers to the top 10 crowdfunding questions. That's patchofland.com/best ever.
Hi, best ever listeners. Welcome to the best real estate investing advice ever show. I'm Joe Fairless, and I'm here with today's guest, Ralph McLaughlin. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for joining us. Ralph is joining us from San Francisco, California, where he is the housing economist for Trulia. And he has tons of credentials. He's got his Bachelor of Science in Regional Development from the University of Arizona and a PhD in Planning, Policy, and Design from the University of California, Irvine, with a specialization in urban development. He has more than a dozen publications and research papers in the fields of housing economics, housing policy, industrial geography, and he was previously an assistant professor and director of the Certificate in Real Estate Development Program at San Jose State, California, and non-real estate related, but certainly ties into real estate because of all the craziness. He has an alcohol, interesting fact-related topic. So he is an avid home brewer, and when he was living in Australia, one of his beers won first place in the IPA category for their national competition. So he is a man of many talents. Excited to have you on the show, Ralph. Can you give the best ever listeners a little bit more about your background and what you're focused on now?
Yeah. So I got into real estate. I'm primarily on the research side of real estate. And I got into it through my former life as an academic. When I was a young man, didn't know what I wanted to do as an undergraduate. I studied abroad, went to Europe, and got really interested in cities. I just like cities. I like being in them. And then I realized that actually a lot of my interest about cities had to do with their form and function. And then as I got a little bit older, I realized that a lot of that form and function was heavily influenced by real estate and real estate markets. So I decided to go to grad school and earn a degree in urban planning, where I focused on real estate and land use regulations. And after I graduated, I got my first job as an academic in Australia, where I wrote about the Australian housing market. I had a chance to come back to my hometown of San Jose and became a professor in urban planning at San Jose State University. And I continued my work there primarily on housing supply. And then last year, I had a bit of an abrupt career shift. I went out of the university sector and into the private sector, where I joined Trulia. And now I get to conduct a lot of really fast-paced, cutting-edge research on the housing market, primarily for consumers and home buyers. I'm also a small-time property investor. My wife and I own one sort of pure rental property and then a triplex that we live in now.
So let's talk about this fast-paced and cutting-edge research that you do at Trulia. What are you seeing right now and what do we need to know?
Well, a lot of the work that we conduct is to help home buyers or potential home buyers make decisions about whether or not it's better to rent or to buy. As you know, and as any investor knows, markets change, they go up and down. And so we help consumers, we help potential buyers sort through all the information to find out, depending on where they live and their individual circumstances, whether or not it's a better time for them to buy or to rent a property. And that's also useful information to know for investors too, because it signals sort of where the market is moving and whether or not is a time to invest in rental property or whether or not it may be time to invest in, say, property for the owner-occupier market.
And help me, I'm a little bit slow sometimes, help me connect the dots. How does determining if it's better to rent or buy in a particular market help investors?
Okay, so if markets are such where, say, demand for rental properties is quite high or it's growing, then investors, that's a key indicator that, hey, maybe now's the time to invest in rental property because perhaps there are an emerging number of households that are going to be looking to rent properties. So, for example, right now, millennials are starting to get jobs. They're starting to move out of their parents' basements. And one of the first steps is probably to rent and not to buy. So that's the kind of information that's useful both to the renters when making a decision about whether to rent or buy a house, or to an investor as to what side of the market to invest in.
If we're looking up rental trends and trying to find this information, where do we go? I assume it's on Trulia, but where do we go and kind of what should we be looking for? What specific data points should we be looking for?
So www.trulia.com/trends is the outlet for our work. We're certainly not the only source of information on real estate research. But when it comes to analyzing information, one of the key data points for investors as well as for home buyers is the ratio of prices to rents in any given market. And that can tell you, to what level, the market is in equilibrium.
Help me draw on that a little bit more. I like where you're going. Can you kind of dumb that down for me and make that very clear? Like what's a ratio? What's a sample ratio? What's good? What's bad?
Yep. So for example, here in San Francisco, the ratio of prices to rents is quite high, which means that if you were to, say, buy a property and rent it out, your return on that property, the horizon is quite long because you're paying, quite a high price for rents that don't maybe don't necessarily cover all the debt obligations with that property. Whereas there may be other markets, such as in Texas and in the South, where rents are quite high relative to prices. So that means you can buy a property that has relatively high rents, and you're much more likely to get a property that will cover all of your debt obligations and hopefully provide a little additional cash flow in those types of markets.
Got it. Okay. So you're talking about the monthly rent divided by the purchase price, or I might have said that wrong, purchase price divided by the monthly rent, and then whatever that ratio is, say, you know, because a lot of people have heard of the 2% rule where you want your rent, your monthly rent to be 2% of the purchase price. It's unlikely. Well, I don't know about unlikely, but I've never come across that in a good market. My ratio is usually about 1.3 to 1.6% of my monthly rent to the purchase price. Is that the ratio you're talking about?
Yeah, we do it, you know, mathematically in an equivalent way. We look at, you know, the median price to the annual rental income. So basically, you know, the cap rate.
Okay.
And, you know, and so in markets that have really high prices relative to rents like San Francisco, you know, they hover, you know, around 20, 21, 22. Whereas markets, in other words, you know, San Francisco, the median price is about 20 times median rent. Whereas in other markets, you know, it's around five. You know, off the top of my head, I think Houston and Dallas and some markets, you know, in Florida and Tennessee are around, you know, much lower number. So it's easier to generate cash flow in those markets than it is in, you know, the markets where prices really exceed rents.
When you started studying this stuff, and clearly you've got a very credentialed background and well-read, well-studied, and as a result, a lot of really cool-looking degrees, I imagine, on your wall. For Best Ever listeners and people like myself who do not have all of those degrees, but we still want to learn, if we don't go to those particular institutions, where can we get educated? Well, you probably are thinking, well, Trulia, /trends. In addition to that, what are some good resources online?
So there's a lot of great resources online. And certainly while we present information on Trulia, you know, we're not necessarily a self-help bastion of information to learn about this stuff. So even a lot of the well-known books out there are good places to start. I mean, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, one of the things that, you know, I really learned from books like that is, you know, make your money work for you. Don't work for your money. You know, and those are sort of higher level lessons to learn. But there are many different resources online. It doesn't take you know, much to you know, to search and find those resources. There's several good books, other good books out there that I've read. You know, the Urban Land Institute puts out a lot of great work on real estate finance and real estate development finance. And you know, many of those books are actually written at a level that, you know, your average reader can learn from them. You know, they're not you know, sort of high level ivory tower kind of stuff. You know, they're very practical oriented books. Those are a lot of sources that even to this day, you know, I still try to keep current. And those are many of the sources that I use to keep up to speed on what's going on.
You mentioned Rich Dad Poor Dad. As we talked about, we had Robert Kiyosaki on the show. So any Best Ever listener who wanted to hear that episode, it's episode 262. It happened about a week ago. So let's talk about your triplex that you're living in. You're living in one side, renting out the others?
That's right. In fact, we bought it about a year and a half ago, you know, when I was a fairly poor paid assistant professor in the public sector. And of course, you know, my wife's got a full-time job, but, you know, we live in one of the most expensive areas in the country. And we really, you know, we didn't have much success early on in finding an affordable place to live. Properties were going off the market very, very quickly. You know, it was tough to put in competitive bids. So we decided to, you know, rethink our strategy on, you know, how to get a place. And so we decided to, well, let's look at the multifamily market. Let's become sort of an owner, occupier slash investor. And, you know, found a great property that was, you know, in a part of Oakland that's very, very well connected. It's a triplex. We live in one unit. We rent out the other two. And it makes living in one of the most expensive markets in the country financially feel like living in a much more affordable place like Houston or Dallas, because we've got two extra units that are helping us pay the mortgage. So we're very, 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 very fortunate and very happy to go down that route.
What type of financing do you have on it?
Because this is an expensive area, and at the time, you know, I had a much lower income than I do now, we initially went with an FHA loan, 3.5% down, and that was really to get us into the property. And once we got into the property, we waited 6 months to, you know, gain a little bit of appreciation, and then we also saved up a little bit more money so that we could refinance into a non-FHA loan, so we didn't have to pay mortgage insurance. As anyone knows, because mortgage insurance on FHA loan can be very, very expensive. So we used it to get into the property. Then we refinanced 6 months later into a conventional loan.
What's something that you've learned along the way as a landlord?
You know, it really pays to take care of your tenants, you know, and it's I know a lot of investors tend to, think of, real estate investing as, purely a business transaction. And you know, for the most part, it is. But, if you take care of your tenants, they'll take care of you. And it's easy to say that because we live, right above our two tenants. But, they're more than happy to, let me know if something goes wrong as soon as possible, which is good for maintenance. One small problem can lead to other big problems. So it's good to have that, open lines of communication. Other things like, it pays to maybe not get the max rent you could in exchange for getting a very good tenant, because a very good tenant is likely to, hopefully be in your unit for, a long period of time. So you don't have as high turnover and it's actually more beneficial on the long run. So those are a couple of things that I learned.
What is your best real estate investing advice ever?
Do your homework. Use data. Don't rely just on hearsay or others' advice. And, even more than that, know where you are at in the property cycle. It's okay to trust others' hearsay, but trust and verify.
You ready for the best ever lightning round?
Sure, let's do it.
First, a quick word from our best ever sponsors.
Crowdfunding. You've heard about it, and now it's time to learn about it. Our best ever sponsor, Patch of Land, is a leading expert in the crowdfunding space, and they've got all the answers to your crowdfunding questions. Go to patchofland.com/best ever and grab your copy of the top 10 answers to the top 10 crowdfunding questions. That's patchofland.com/best ever.
Okay, Ralph, best ever book you've read?
John Steinbeck's East of Eden.
Best ever listeners, I know you like audio, so you can go to freebesteverbook.com and get a free audio version of a book like that. Best ever personal growth experience and what you learned from it.
First job out of college, I worked on the U.S.-Mexico border seeking out endangered frogs. Required a lot of physical labor in really hot conditions, and I decided that I'd much rather use my mind for my day job than my body.
I'm sorry. I just started smiling when you said seeking out endangered. I don't know why endangered frogs just makes me smile. And I'm sure we've got some environmentalists, best ever listeners are like, why are you laughing about that? I just thought I found it funny.
It was a $9 an hour job, just finished college and needed work, and it sounded exciting. And it was, but it was a hell of a lot of physical work. That's for sure.
Best ever success habit you practice.
I go for an hour walk every single day, hour walk on my own. It gives me time to think about the days, the weeks, the months, the years, priorities. It gives me a chance to really think about what I want to work on.
The people in Buffalo, New York are thinking, damn you and your nice weather.
I'm sure you can bundle up in Buffalo, right?
No, you've never been to Buffalo.
I'll have to ask my coworker. My coworker's from Buffalo, and he's living out here for a reason.
What time do you go? You go in the mornings?
I usually go in the morning. I usually get up at about 5, and between 5 and 6, I go out for a walk with my dogs, and just gives me a great time to, just to think, whether it's thinking about a problem at work that I'd like to address, or whether it's more bigger picture things about, my plan for the month or the year or, the next 5 years.
What time do you usually go to bed?
This is embarrassing. I'm usually in bed by 8:30.
No, that's typical for all the best ever guests who say they wake up at 5 a.m. I always ask that follow-up question, when do you go to bed? Because I'm thinking, when do they actually sleep? But you might be on the early end. I will say that. Usually it's by 10 p.m. So you do have your warm glass of milk a little bit earlier than most people do.
Yeah, my cold glass of beer usually, and then I'm out at 8:30.
Right, exactly, exactly. Well-crafted beer at that.
Exactly.
Best ever deal you've done?
Like we talked about before, the triplex that I purchased and live in now.
Best ever project you're most excited about right now?
I'm excited about the research team that we're starting to build out here at Trulia. It's going to allow us to do some really cutting edge research that helps home buyers or renters make the best decision about buying or renting a property.
Best ever way you like to give back?
Teaching. It's what I miss most about being at a university, and I'm looking forward to continuing to find ways to teach and pass on the knowledge to future generations.
Best ever quote and what it means to you?
Best ever quote, John Steinbeck. Ideas are like rabbits. You get a couple of them and learn to handle them, and pretty soon you have a dozen. You know, and that really means that, you know, everyone's got ideas, but you really need to know how to think through the ideas, and not just think through them, but also find ways to implement them. And once you get experience coming up with ideas and following through and learning how to be sort of malleable in the process and taking those ideas to reality, you become better at doing that. And, you know, beware of getting idea, because soon enough that can lead into many, many more.
How have you applied that specifically in your life or career?
So I was always, you know, very interested in real estate supply, specifically in housing supply, especially when I was younger, you know, and I always thought it was, you know, a very, you know, sort of simplistic process that, you know, people need places to live and then builders build them. And so I got an idea about, you know, how to study, you know, housing supply and how land use regulations affect housing supply. But I had so many different ideas, that sort of one core theme. And it wasn't until I took that first idea and actually wrote about it in a very poor, naive manner that I started to get more ideas about, you know, how to study it, you know, more relevantly, more accurately. And, you know, to have, you know, it really taught me to have faith that just because you think you have a great idea, you know, doesn't mean you should necessarily always stick to that idea. There's lots of tangents that can come off of that. And, you know, you got to be appreciative of those tangents and not dismissive.
What would you say is the biggest mistake you've made in real estate?
Buying my first house. So when I was living in Australia, I was renting. My wife and I were renting. The owner decided to sell, and we decided to buy, which, you know, normally sounds like a good idea. But there was a, you know, there was a chance, especially looking back, that we would move in, you know, a year or two. And it turned out we actually had to move in 6 months back to the U.S. And we lost a good amount of money on that. So for those home buyers out there or even other investors, you know, if you think there's a possibility you might have to get out of that investment real quickly, you know, you might want to think twice about pulling the trigger.
And why is that? Because some would say, well, if you buy it right, then it doesn't matter how quickly you need to get out because you go in with equity. So what's like the deeper thing there that caused that?
So the deeper thing, and this is really more relevant to when we were living in Australia than here in the U.S., but in Australia, they have something called stamp duty, and it's basically a large tax that you have to pay whenever you buy a property. And stamp duty, I think at the time, was around 8 or 9% of the value of the house. You just had to pay out. So it's basically like instead of coming up with a 20% down payment, you would have to come up with like a 29 or 30% down payment. But you wouldn't get 10% of that in equity. So basically, it was like 10% of the house, nearly 10% of the value of the house that we just lost that we had to pay from taxes. You know, that you know, maybe doesn't necessarily apply here, but there's still, you know, costs associated with transactions here in the U.S. and buying a property. And even if you have equity, if you have to get out very quickly, you know, you may not have, you know, earned enough from that property to cover the costs of acquiring.
Where does the stamp duty go? What's that for?
So it's a tax. It goes to the state government to pay for things. Actually goes to a general pool, but usually it's applied to things like affordable housing or road infrastructure. It sort of ebbs and flows depending on who's running the state government at the time. But it's, you know, it's sort of it's akin to a transfer tax that we have here in some municipalities in the U.S., but on a much sort of larger amount.
Any other main differences between buying here in Australia?
Yeah, so buying in Australia, it's very, very unusual to have a buyer's agent. Usually, buyers work directly with the seller's agent, which I found a little odd at first because, you know, sometimes it can help to have an agent who's looking out for your best interest and may be able to, you know, sniff out things maybe that aren't such a good deal. So it really makes buyers in Australia, whether it's investors or whether it's owner-occupiers, you know, it's much more important for buyers to do their homework there than it is here, because here in the U.S., you know, we typically work with a buyer's agent who, you know, helps look out for you.
So those are two things that are more favorable for the seller, or at least one's neutral to the seller and the other's more favorable to the seller. Are there any advantages as a buyer compared to the U.S.?
You know, it was a bit easier, I think, to get a loan compared to now. You know, I don't want to compare it to getting a loan, say, 2004, 2005, 2006 in the U.S. because you can get a loan, you know, with no documentation. But I found the process personally a bit easier in Australia. You know, banks, you know, although they require documentation, you know, they were able to do a lot of the verification on their own, as opposed to, you know, the buyer having to provide all the documentation themselves. So if you gave the bank in Australia, you know, all your details about, you know, where you worked and what your, you know, income history was, they did all the work basically on your behalf to verify, you know, your incomes and your assets. So it was much easier than here, at least my recent experience. You know, I think the last when I bought my triplex in Oakland, I must have submitted over 100 to 150 different documents on my own, you know, and that was a lot of my time, you know, that I had to do that. Whereas in Australia, you know, it was a small fraction of that. And the bank was able to do most of it on their own accord.
What's the best ever place to reach you?
Twitter. At Housingnomics, that's at HousingNomix.
HousingNomix?
HousingNomix. Housingnomics.
Got it. Housingnomics.
Exactly right. Housingnomics.
Ralph, thank you so much for being on the show, sharing your best ever advice with best ever listeners, and talking about your Deckard past with kind of the studies that you've done and what you're doing now at Trulia, and yeah, identifying the housing trends, conducting research on housing markets, kind of what to look for. Everyone check out trulia.com/trends. Go see what they've got going on there. I'm gonna go on there right after I get done gabbit on this interview and look at that stuff. And, you know, talking about your triplex, and really the triplex example is an example that is relevant to anybody who lives in a market similar to San Francisco. So I'm talking about you New York people, I'm talking New York City people, I'm talking about maybe some Austinites, some Miami people. I don't know what you call yourself, Miami people. What is it? Do you know Miamiers or something?
Miamians?
Miamians. Yeah, I think it might be a Miamians. And my former roommate is from Miami. I should know that. People from LA. So anybody living in that type of market, live in one side, rent out the other, get an FHA loan. And then if you choose to do so, maybe get a loan 6 months later to do a non-FHA if you don't want to pay that high mortgage interest that Ralph didn't want to pay. So thank you so much for being on the show and talking through the differences. You know, we kind of fell into it, but I'm glad that you talked about the differences between Australia and here and the different loan advantages, where the advantage to the buyer in Australia is that it's much easier to get the paperwork submitted and completed. It's more of a turnkey-ish process. I doubt it's turnkey, but turnkey-ish process. And the kind of the two other variables that are in play, the stamp tax, I'd never heard of that, 8-9% at the time, not sure what it is now, but 8-9% whenever you were doing it, and buyers working directly with the seller's agent. So there could be some conflict of interest there. I'm sure they've got a system that has worked out those kinks, but certainly from an outsider looking in with me, it seems like that would be a little bit more of a challenge. So good to know that. Thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything else you want to mention to the best ever listeners?
Nope. Happy to be here. It was fun chatting with you, Joe.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Hey, you best ever listener. Do you want more? Then go to joefairless.com, where you'll get tons of free videos, templates, and content to help you get deals done. And remember to subscribe to the best ever show in iTunes, so you can keep getting your daily dose of the best real estate investing advice ever.